Hey guys, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Micro Brands. Lunch with Norm. Okay, well, I still feel like a bag of dirt, so we'll try to get through this podcast, but we have a really exciting guest today, so I'm really happy to be talking with Sharon Evan, founder of Amazon Alpha Coaching, and you also might recognize Sharon by her popular YouTube channel. Sharon and I are going to be talking about how to research products in 2021. I messed up the other day. I kept saying 2011. I love living 10 years back. But anyways, we're going to be talking about micro-niching and how important it is and how to keep your brand building in mind. So before we do that, where's Kels?
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
You might have to come in and do the questions today or something.
The question for...
Oh, man, yeah. Between coughing and feeling,
sorry,
we'll see if we can get through it.
Yeah, don't worry, I'll be here. Looks like we have a bunch of people coming in already. That's awesome. Darwin, hey, how's it going?
Hey, Darwin.
Milos, Renee, Merry All Christmas, right. Happy holidays to everyone.
Marina and Wendy are on again.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome.
I think just before we go, we should say that we do have a Christmas episode happening. So if you guys are available for the lunchtime, come and join us. We're still doing it. So
yep. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
That's right. Welcome, Lisa. Okay. So everyone joining, if you're new to the podcast, you can always find the full episodes on our YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is Norman Farrar. You can just search Lunch with Norm and you'll be able to find it. It's like we got Simon joining us, Tom,
Rod.
You guys are feeling better. Rad,
all right,
welcome.
Guys.
Nice. We got a great turnout already. This is awesome.
Master PC.
So if you guys haven't either, join our Facebook group, our community. I put up a thing about what should we call ourselves, and I think it's pretty clear that we are going to be the Beard Nation. So welcome, Beard Nation. It's a brand
new. What happens when I shave this thing?
We got some new people too. Master PC, Philomena from Montreal, Quebec, Yaro and Bia are here. Awesome. So we got almost 30 viewers already. This is great. Going to be a great show. I don't want to take up any more time. If you have any questions, put them in the comment section. I'll be controlling it. And if you have any questions during the show, let us know. And yeah, before we start, what's your favorite? What are we gonna do? What's your favorite?
Henrietta says shave. Okay. All right.
I don't know if we want to see that, Henrietta. Okay. So yeah. Enjoy the show, everyone.
Okay. Now let's see how my throat holds up. Okay. So for anybody having any questions, just you can always throw them in the comment side and we will get to them hopefully during the podcast. If not, we'll try to answer everything in the group. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. Sharon.
Hey, Norm.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So if my throat gives out, I'm just going to mime, okay? Or we'll do charades
or
something.
I'm here. Don't worry.
All right.
I'll just keep talking. I'm good at talking.
Oh, perfect. Good. I'm not. Yeah.
Oh, I'm great. I can talk all day. So, you know, I'll complete you on that one.
Awesome. So why don't we talk a little bit about who you are? What's your background?
Who I am. So I'm Sharon Evan. My background is, what is my background? I'm not 100% here and we won't say why, but I was just laughing a lot before we came on. So I need to refocus. Okay. So I am Sharon Evan and I am originally from New Zealand. I moved to Israel about 10 years ago. I started selling online when I was 15 on trademe.co.nz, which is like the eBay version of New Zealand. I had my first online store when I was 18. And in Israel, I also had a clothing store. And then I discovered Amazon in 2016, yeah. And that's it. Now I'm doing this kind of stuff, which is interesting.
2016. Yeah. That's not that long.
Yeah. No, it's 4 years.
You know, that's what the beauty is about Amazon, right? Is that you can know nothing about e-commerce. You can really get involved, take a course, go to a couple of masterminds, and you can make money if you do it properly right away. And, you know, and I'm not talking about get rich quick.
No.
Like, I hate the Lamborghini with cash. You know, this is work. This is a job. And if you dig into it and you learn all the different angles, you can be very successful. It's the only business in the world that I think you can do this. E-com. I love e-com.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was new to e-commerce because that's all I've been doing my entire adult life. But I was it's kind of weird that I, out of all the people, you know, discovered Amazon only in 2016. You know, it's kind of weird. How did I not discover it so much earlier? But until around then, I was just sure that Amazon was a place where you buy books. I didn't even know, because what you see in America, I know that you're in Canada, et cetera, it's not the same on the other side of the world. Like from New Zealand, in New Zealand and Australia, Amazon is not what it is in America. And in Israel, when I moved here, people weren't really buying stuff on Amazon. So I discovered it in 2016, but e-commerce has been, you know, it's like I was bred into it kind of thing.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I've been in this longer than I want to remember. Longer than most people listening, probably. Wow. You know? That's kind of scary.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. Back to the BBS days, you know. Back to, I wasn't selling on e-commerce at all with the 1200 baud modems. Well, you know, when you attach them to your phone, but I was involved with bulletin boards way back in the day. CompuServe and AOL. I had a CompuServe email address. I mean, I was a geek back then. But anyway.
What? I was probably 5 back then. No, I'm kidding. I'm 32. I don't know how old I would have been when that happened.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't think you were born then. How's that?
Probably not.
Oh. So we're going to be talking a bit about product research going into 2021. So is there any differences that you're seeing in product research from 2020 to 2021?
Here's the thing. I have my own ways of doing product research, which is kind of different from, different from most. And it's not necessarily that it's different towards 2021, because my product research methods haven't really changed. I've never done the whole software thing anyway. Mm-hmm. But I do think that coming into 2021, you know, COVID did open up a whole world of more niches, you know, than what was beforehand, right? And I do also think that it's even more important to start relying on softwares coming towards 2021. And what I mean by software is parameters, right? Going into softwares and looking at specific parameters to find the products, the potential products. I think that it's time. I think 2020 has taught us a lot. Mm-hmm. About many things, not just product research, but, you know, I've always said, never put all your eggs in one basket. Don't rely only on Amazon. Make sure you also work outside of Amazon. And then I don't know if you know, I got 4 products taken down in October on Prime Day for almost a month. You don't know about it?
No.
The whole world knows about it because I made a video called The Ugly Side of Amazon and I shared my story of what I went through. It was terrible.
Kelsey, why don't we know about this?
Oh, no, because you know what? It was so many people from the industry were trying to help me. Basically, I'm pretty sure it was an inside job and someone had uploaded a flat file with heaps and heaps of drug-related keywords and took down 4 of my listings and it took forever to get them back. And anyway, I won't bore you with it, but when it happened, I was like, look at me telling everyone not to be dependent on Amazon. And then Amazon fulfills all of my outside of Amazon orders. And then when your products get restricted, because they were fully restricted, I couldn't fulfill my own orders. And then that was me telling, I couldn't do multi-channel fulfillment. They wouldn't let me fulfill my orders. And here was me telling everyone to not rely on Amazon. And so yeah, 2020 has taught me a lot of things. And one of them is to start using 3PLs more and not just talk about using 3PLs, but actually start using them. And for product research, I think it's just a great time for people to stop using softwares and to start looking at actually what's happening right now, because the softwares are looking at history, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't know that there is COVID right now and things are changing because of COVID, right? So you got to use a little bit of your brain and not just rely on softwares and start using other methods.
Okay, let's go through some of those methods.
Cool. So you want me to tell you some of my secrets, my top secrets?
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, one of my typical methods that's like pretty well known is hobbies. So, you know, I made a video on this on YouTube about a year and a half ago, I think, or a year ago, where I go to Google, I type in hobbies, and I find different types of hobbies. And then I really go to micro niching, finding products around a certain hobby. Mm-hmm. For example, I found, did you know that there's such a thing called insect pinning? You actually pin dead insects. Did you know this?
I look did.
Like you did.
I'm sorry.
You did.
I
oh my God.
It's me.
It's just so okay. Well, I didn't know that there's such a thing as insect pinning, right? Carlos had me once, and then I told him, did you know about insect pinning? And I didn't know at the time that, you know, he was the insects guy.
Yeah.
But I guess you are as well. But anyway, so yeah, I'm sure a lot of people do not know that people collect dead insects and pin them, and they need supplies, right? They need pins, they need boards. So when you go to look at hobbies, you can find a whole bunch of hobbies that you don't even know about, and you can find products around that. Sometimes it'll be, you know, products as a supply to that hobby. Sometimes it'll be products that are like, for example, if we take bowling, right? So you have bowling, ooh, and your editor says, ooh. Yeah, it's pretty gross. If you take bowling as an example, so most people will just look at bowling. And then what I do is I niche it down. So I ask myself, who can I sell bowling products to? So seniors, women, men, kids, and if it's kids, what age group? Because there's babies, and you know, so I niche it down, and then I start finding stuff, and I'm pretty good at finding gaps. So that's one example.
You know, before you go on to the next example, but
yeah,
this is a, when you talk about micro niching, and let's say you find the needles for the little insects the boards, you can really build out a great brand. You know, and because it allows you to go so far, right? You can go really wide and you can get all sorts of things related to that niche. You could even expand out. So let's say you get outside of insects or, you know, whatever it is, whatever else needs boards, whatever else needs pins. I don't know what that would be, but you could really build a great brand just using that one method that you talked about.
Well, one of the things I should say is I don't personally believe anymore in selling random products. I only believe in brand building, and that's the only thing that I do.
That's why I like you so much.
Well, you know, I know a lot of sellers the same way you know a lot of sellers, and I know that there are a lot of sellers that do really well from selling random products, and there's a lot of sellers that do really well at building brands. Mm-hmm. And for me, it just makes so much more sense, you know, when you know who your buyer avatar is, you know who you're selling to, and you build a brand around it. So that is the way that I work. And no matter what, when I'm doing product research, one of my first questions is, what can I build around this? So, you know, I don't usually bring out products that are, it's just like a one product and that's it. There's nothing else you can you can sell within that. But I 100% agree with you. It's, you know, when you get into that, sometimes you can repurpose. So if you're using a pin for one thing, sometimes you'll find that you can repurpose it for something else as well.
Sorry about that. but what I was going to say is that, you know, although like I love building brands, you love building brands, but there's nothing wrong if somebody wants to get into doing exactly what we're talking about, the opposite of what we're talking about. If you just want to throw up a product, or if you're into retail arbitrage, you're getting into wholesale, there's some great opportunities for you. But I just think there's more equity in building a brand.
I feel like for me, I've never done, you know, anything else. I've been involved in wholesale, you know, as a silent investor, and I've never done it myself where I've had to. So I don't really have much experience in anything but private label. But I feel that when you, you're right, of course, you're right. Like, you can make money other ways, but I feel that when you're chasing after products all the time, that's what you're doing. You forever need to find more products, because Amazon products, there is a shelf life or an expiration until when a niche becomes saturated, right? And if all you have is 1, 2, 3 random products, 2, 3 years down, most of the time it'll get saturated, and then you'll have to find continuously more products. Whereas when you're building a brand, you can also build your brand outside of Amazon as well, right? I was listening to you the other day, and you were talking about, you know, how you rediscovered eBay again. And that made me think. And I said to my husband, you know, I didn't even think, and you said that you also have a beauty brand, and we also have a beauty brand. And I was like, how the hell did we like not get back on eBay? You know? So it also made me think about that. But anyway, back to product research. I was saying earlier, repurposing. Right. So repurposing is another great way to do product research. Many, many times you can find one product and repurpose it and sell it to a totally different buyer avatar. Right. I'm trying to think of an example right now for you.
I've got an example for you.
Okay. Share your example.
So one of the products I sell is soap. So mm-hmm. I sell this natural soap, and I can sell it, you know, 5-ounce bar, and people will, you know, pay $10 for it. Then I can go, and this is just a niche. Guys, don't get into this niche. It sucks. But no, but anyways, I just got into Mudders. So these are people that like to abuse their body, do all these obstacle course, run through the mud, get completely filthy. And I mean, anything other than walking up the stairs and down the stairs is too much exercise for me. So I'll never do this obstacle course. But sell Dead Sea Mud soap to Mudders, and with the logo, or with the caption, get clean with mud. And it's just Dead Sea Mud. And so anyways, now I've got all these Mudders buying this soap, and they're bigger blocks, so I can sell it for a heck of a lot more. And yeah, it's just the thing now. So that's just repurposing. And you can do that for, it could be almost for any sport or hobbyist. Like, it, again, just soap for these different types of hobbyists. Sports soaps, or, you know, people who play golf might like green soaps. I don't know. I'm just making that one up. But
That's very true, what you're saying, especially about the Dead Sea stuff. That's it. What did you say? What was it? How you called it?
Get clean with mud.
Get clean with mud. Love that. That's very, very smart.
Yeah. So just played around with that. And, you know, it can be very successful when you do that. And what I love about repurposing, sometimes you can't do it, but if you position it right, you can definitely repackage and reprice, you know, products. And here's another, okay, Dead Sea again. So, you know how the typical Dead Sea mud comes in a 16-ounce container, and, you know, it's going for about $24.99 on Amazon now. Well, you could, let's say you're selling that. You could repackage it into a much smaller, higher, just a premium bottle, 4-ounce, which I've done, by the way, and resold out at $24.99. Now I'm getting $24.99. competing with the guy selling it at $16.99 and probably selling more because people like the bottle.
Yeah.
So that's, love that you said repurposing.
Yeah. So repurposing is something that a lot of people don't like. What I mean is exactly what you also said. So I'll give an example. You know how there's watering cans, right? Just a normal watering can, right? Mm-hmm. So on a decor level, or however, how do you say it? Do you say decor or decor?
Decor.
Decor. Okay.
Well, that's so Canadian. You mentioned the English way and the American way. Well, up here in Canada.
Canada. Yeah. No, Australia and New Zealand's even worse. So actually, I don't even know how Australians say it, but I say decor. So for example, you have a watering can, which is just a normal watering can. And then there is this new thing, which is like an outdoor gardening decor. And you've got a watering can. They've added fairy lights to it. And now it's like an actual thing. Like people are buying a watering can with fairy lights and they're placing it as like, you know, like a, like art type of thing, right? Repurposing a product or taking bath bombs. And instead of selling them as a bath bomb, you may know this example of mine, but selling it as, you know, the bridesmaid proposal gift. And then it's actually got bath bombs in it, but you're not even targeting the keyword bath bombs, right? Or taking a clock, and instead of selling a clock for specifically like a timer for kids for when they brush their teeth, or, you know, so taking a product that exists, but giving it a new purpose many, many times is heaps and heaps of different, gaps that you can find. And one of those ways that I find them is usually through Pinterest. Pinterest is my best friend. So I'm on Pinterest all day long, from the morning until the evening. Like, that's not true, but a lot of the day. I don't have time to be all day long, but I'm on Pinterest a lot. There you go. Someone just wrote Pinterest is gold. Pinterest is really the way to go when it comes to product research.
So let's talk about that for a second with Pinterest. I know my partner in Centurion, Tim Jordan, he uses Pinterest all the time. So mm-hmm. why don't you talk a little bit about how you can find products on Pinterest?
Well, first of all, I've been using Pinterest for years, way before I knew Tim. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I'm saying the truth, but I do love Tim. I know that he uses Pinterest as well. Pinterest is very woman oriented. So even before I was selling, I was using Pinterest. You know, I go to Pinterest for everything. Like during COVID, I even went to Pinterest to, you know, download all sorts of things for my kid to color in, you know. So Pinterest, I love Pinterest. On a product level, on a product research level, you still need a starting point. You can't just go on Pinterest and mess around. Like, you need to have a starting point, right? You need to have some sort of niche that you're starting with. So, for example, with Pinterest, I'll mix two things together, okay? Let's say one of my product research methods is careers. So I will write down a whole bunch of different careers, and then I'll write all sorts. So let's just say speech therapist. Okay. And then I'll go to Google and I look at different speech therapist products, like products that speech therapists need to do their job. Right. And then that'll be my starting point. I'll take that and I'll go to Pinterest and then I'll look for ideas there. And then I'll compare what's on from Pinterest on Amazon. Right. And most of the time, many, many products from Pinterest will actually take you to Etsy. So what you usually have on my million tabs when I'm on, you know, on my computer is you'll have Amazon, Brand Analytics, Helium 10 for the keywords, Pinterest, Etsy, and then a million products that are opened up as potential products, but like heaps of different Pinterest ones as well. For example, you know, you could be looking at, so it's either a starting point where it's broad. So for example, like the speech therapist, or if it's decor and I wanted to look at music room decor, then I'll go to, you know, I'll type in music room decor and then I'll just start going down the rabbit hole from there. Or if it could be product specific. So if I'm looking at, I don't know, I have a ruler here. Let's just say somehow I can find a ruler. I was looking at rulers and I wanted to sell a ruler for some really stupid reason. I could go on Pinterest and then it can give me all sorts of different ideas for rulers, right? Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll find a Montessori wooden looking one, right? That I wouldn't know about through that. I learned so much through Pinterest. Sometimes you know, you discover things like insect picking or pinning, I mean, as well through that kind of stuff. So I use Pinterest for ideas because we have this thing where we live in our bubble, right? You don't know what you don't know. So if I'm not a speech therapist and I don't know what the type of products that they're looking at that they have, as in, you know, they have all sorts of different flashcards and things like that, I can get ideas for different types of flashcards and things like that through Pinterest. And then you got to go and compare that to Amazon, right? And see what, so yeah, Pinterest is great for differentiation, basically, mm-hmm. I would say, and ideas.
Yeah. And I think the important thing, you already mentioned it, is to go back to Amazon to validate it, maybe go in and see the search volume and the competitiveness using a Helium 10 app or something like that. Have you ever gone to any crowdfunding sites to do research?
I have. I do many things. So I will go to, it's just left my mind, Kickstarter. Yeah, Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I have done that. I don't do it that often. But what I do, and people who follow me know this, I watch at least 2 episodes of Shark Tank every single day, like every day. And the thing is, there's years and years of Shark Tank. And there's, for example, Shark Tank Australia. And you watch Shark Tank Australia as an example. And honestly, like 90% of the products, they don't even sell on Amazon, right? And many, many times they may have a patent, but it's a design patent. I know this sucks for the Shark Tank people, but it's great for us as people that want to sell products. And many, many times you can find ways around their design patents because you just change your design or there's certain things that you can do. And many of them don't even have patents. And yeah, so I get a lot of ideas from places like that as well. But I will say that there are many, many, many hidden treasures in watching Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. Remember, there's Shark Tank Australia, there's Shark Tank America. Is there a Shark Tank? You know, you guys have
the original Shark Tank started in Canada, and it was called Dragon's Den.
Dragon's Den, that's right. UK also has Dragon's Den as well. The UK also has it. Yeah. So if you watch that, and there's years and years of episodes of it on YouTube, there's so many, like, I've just found so many products using that. And you go to Amazon and they're not there.
Yeah, I know. That's the crazy part.
And I'm just like, how do these people go to Shark Tank and they're not on Amazon? Like, what's wrong with them?
Yeah. And you know, if you like, you can watch, I love it because it really does show people, especially if they don't know a lot about business planning or, you know, just putting a plan together, what investors are looking for. But if you want to just cut to the chase, you can go right to, I know with Dragon's Den, you can go right to the products list and you can just whip through them and check. What, yeah, it's really kind of cool. The other big one right now is Etsy. Etsy's going crazy. I was saying on, I think it was the last podcast or the podcast before that, Dave Kettner, he's just putting out a course on it, but he's using print on demand in Etsy, not putting any money into inventory. And this month, and I'm sure he's not going to worry about me saying this, but over the last 3 weeks or so, this month, he's made over $67,000 in sales on Etsy. So Etsy, I think Etsy, it's going to be coming back because it used to be only handmade items, right? Now they're accepting a whole bunch of new items. So that's another nice one I like.
Are you on Etsy with any of your beauty products?
No, I got to get on. I got an account. I started selling on Etsy. I handed it over to somebody and it never went. So, but I'm just like eBay. I got to get back on.
So, with Etsy, you also know that I do a lot of one-on-one coaching and it's just ridiculous the amount of people. I'm like, are you also selling this on Etsy? And they're like, oh no, I didn't even think about it. And I'm like, why? Why aren't you selling it on Etsy? I've got, someone that I coach, and she's very active in my group. She sells toys. She's made thousands on Etsy this month. So many people. And you're right. Like, there are some rules though with Etsy, but there's also ways to get around the rules for it not being a handmade product. So there are ways to you know,
yeah,
get around it. But Etsy is in my opinion, it's not for every product.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for every product, but it's for many, many products. So especially, you know, kids' toys and even beauty, you know, there's all sorts of things around beauty and decor products and wooden products. And there's just an endless amount of products that that everyone that is selling on Amazon should go and check if they can also sell it on Etsy. What's the worst case scenario, you know?
Exactly. What's the worst case scenario? Yeah. So, Kels, it looks like there's either a lot of comments or a lot of questions happening.
A lot of both right now. But before we get into that, I think this would be a great time to announce our little giveaway today. So for today's giveaway, we have a 30-minute consultation with Sharon. So to enter the giveaway today, so this is for anyone that hasn't won a consultation yet on Lunch with Norm. So if you've won before with Mayan or any of other guests, please don't enter this one. I'll be checking. To enter, just tag two people and let's get the word out. So as soon as you tag two people, you'll be entered into the draw, into our little Wheel of Kelsey, we call here on the show. And yeah, so if you have a question about how to at someone, all you have to do is hit the at symbol and write the person's name, and that's it. Super simple. Okay, so we do have tons of questions coming in. I'll try it.
Oh, and by the way, so we are going to have a second prize today too. This is just a premium box of chocolates.
I want it. I'm kidding.
Okay, so for the chocolates, just hashtag chocolates. I think that'll be easier.
It would have been better hashtag beard guy, but okay. No, hashtag chocolate.
Hashtag beard guy. Hashtag
there we go.
Beard guy. I agree with that.
All right.
Bearded one. I also voted, by the way.
Did you?
I think it was, there was something else. I can't remember. It wasn't bearded ones. It was another one. I can't remember. I have to look up what
Kelsey Travelocity did. Gnome, Gandalf.
There's Normies, the Normie, bearded one, Beard Nation.
Beard Nation. It was Beard Nation.
Ah, there we go.
I love that. I love Beard Nation.
Okay.
Beard now.
So, first of all, from Henrietta, Sharon, so where else do you sell?
So, we sell on our online store and on Amazon today. That's where we sell today. But I've sold everywhere there is to sell. So, that's where we're at today.
Let me see. We got a couple.
And I just want to add that having an online store, Shopify or WooCommerce or wherever, if you properly market it and if you've got a great product, great customer service, if it's, it doesn't even have to be in a price range. If you've got high perceived value, you can charge an arm and a leg, but you can compete. And I can show you example after example after example, as long as you, market on either Facebook or Pinterest or wherever, you can have a really successful e-commerce site. So don't forget about that. Like this is, we talk a lot about Amazon, but there are so many other platforms, and I can give you so many examples of where we've outperformed Amazon just because we targeted our audience. Just targeted our audience properly.
We don't send any of our outside traffic to Amazon anymore. We send all of our outside traffic to our stores, online stores. None of our outside, because first of all, you also sell beauty products, so you know this. We have endless amount of repeated buyers. Like we have people coming back for their 100th plus order every single month. You want our products to keep working, maybe you don't sell those types of beauty products, but we do. We have all sorts of different anti-aging products as well. And we also have a baby brand, which is a postpartum brand. I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about this one where you're selling products that people need every single month. Why the hell would I continue sending them to Amazon? I don't need Amazon. I want to own my bios where I can do whatever the hell I want with them, right? So I send all of my outside traffic to my stores. I will say that I was on Etsy as well, mm-hmm. but we did get kicked off Etsy. So yeah, that was...
Oh, you were the person.
I was probably one of many people. But we did get kicked off. We did get kicked off Etsy. It's just because our products weren't handmade and we did say that they were, and then, but they weren't, and they were actually, you know, so yeah, but you can get around it. There are different ways to get around it, and there are many other. So after watching Norm a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to get back into eBay as well. No,
good.
Because I was like, oh, we should, you know, I tell everyone diversify, and yeah, eBay's not dead. eBay's not going.
No way, it's coming back. All right, Kels, next question or comment.
So, how do you know if your product will be successful or not before starting?
For me,
how do you know if your product will be successful?
Yeah,
or not?
It's proper research. I like go ahead and answer that, Sharon.
Okay. First of all, you don't 100% know anything. I could be launching a product, and you could be launching a product. We'll have different results. But the best thing that you can do is, number one, know your keywords. So you have to go ahead and understand keyword research. You need to understand the ability for market share within. This is something not a lot of people speak about. So Helium 10 has a tool called Market Tracker. Before Helium 10 had Market Tracker, I was using a software called Totalytics, which is just for understanding market cap. So understanding market volume, what is the cap for your specific niche, and then understanding the potential of market share within that niche. And this is stuff that like I could talk about for a long time, but if we make a list of the things that you need to do in order to know if a product is successful or not, is one, is there demand for it, right? Do people actually want it? Two, is there room for new sellers? And you can understand that through understanding how to do, you know, understanding if there's room for you through market share, if you can actually have a piece of the pie. Mm-hmm. And the way that you also need to know that is three, through differentiation. I think differentiation is something that is a must in 2021. In many, 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 many niches, if you want to sell a product for the long term, okay, for not just for 5 and 6 months, but if you want to continue selling the product for the long term, differentiation is important. And the most important thing is also, are you actually going to make money out of the product? So knowing your numbers. And you won't know 100% until you actually start.
Yeah, the other part to this, and I know that you already do this when you're doing it, is competitive research. So you might find that plastic shoe stretcher that other people are doing, and can you compete with their listing, or what are they doing right in their listing? What are they doing wrong in their listing? I know you hear this a lot, but check out the reviews for negative and positive. And I mean, it could be as simple as, like you were talking about differentiation. It might be taking a red shoe stretcher and making a black. Sorry, there goes my mic. Stay stand there. You're good. But making it black, you know, it could be that simple. So you don't know. But the other part to this, which I think is really important as well. So research. So I like a pick foo, you just rip apart the research or the images, the titles, the bullets. But the other thing that I like is just a traffic blitz. If I have a plan, like I know the research, and I check and see if I can drive traffic over, or you know, turn on the PPC or turn on other forms of marketing to dominate. Like usually when I go in, I know I'm going to be able to compete at the top level. That's where I want to come into the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And anyways, that's the biggest part for me, other than what Sharon was talking about, is making sure not only you know your numbers, that's probably number one, but also competitiveness or competition.
Yeah. So when I talked about the market tracker, that's exactly what it does. It's competitor. It's analyzing the entire niche through understanding where your competitors are at. But mm-hmm. yeah, I 100% agree with you. Like competition analysis and market analysis comes in, you know, together, and understanding who your competition is. right? And just sometimes people say to me, but you know, but I was comparing myself to this product, and I'm like, have you seen their storefront? They own, they dominate this niche. You can't, you don't have a chance against them.
Right.
You know, so yeah, understanding also who your competitors are, is, and what their flaws are. And I think for me also, one of the most important things is understanding who you're selling to. So, you know, understanding your buyer avatar. I don't get into the big, huge products. I get into niches. I really believe in micro niching and niching it down. Not everyone needs to be, you don't have to have a $50,000, $60,000 product to be successful in Amazon. You can have lots of smaller 10, you know, plus $1,000 products a month, times 10, 20 of those over time and be, you know, pretty successful. I don't necessarily think that everyone needs to, when you talk about market analysis, okay, and you look at and you see who are the real, like, huge top sellers, the ones that, the high rollers, the ones that have been established for a really long time. It doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to get in there. You can just find a gap within that niche. You know what I mean? You don't have to be selling as much as them to have a piece of that pie. You just need to find another gap within that niche. You look like you're lost about what I'm saying. Do you get what I'm talking about?
No, I get 100% what you're saying.
Cool. Yeah. No, because you don't have to. People, a lot of the times, they want to just be number one within a market. And the thing is, it's great if you can be, but there's many, many times where you don't have to be number one and make a significant amount of money. You can micro niche and only focus on one specific buyer avatar within that and only market to them. Right. So instead of marketing to, I'm going to give a terrible example, but I've just got a water bottle here. It's why I'm giving it. Instead of selling water bottles, like just selling water bottles with unicorns on them. And then you're just going after the little girls that like the unicorns. Terrible example. Nobody sells water bottles, but you know.
Now we're going to be swamped on Amazon with water bottles with unicorns. Do you ever use, every social media platform has their own trends, but Google Trends, like type in your keyword and see, you know, how the trend is for that keyword.
I use keywords everywhere. Mm-hmm. On Google, you know, keywords everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep. So it, first of all, automatically shows you through Google the history of the trend of that keyword. But I definitely use Google Trends. You can also use it through Helium 10 as well. And yeah, I use everything there is to use to understand. I when I validate a product, I look a lot at the history mm-hmm. of it, but a lot at what can I bring to the table that's new as well. So just because one person didn't do well within that niche doesn't mean that I can't do well. I don't know everything that they went through, you know, what was there, well, you can know what kind of keywords they're going after and things like that. But just because one product may not be doing so well doesn't mean that I can't kick ass in it. I probably can.
Yeah, there's one other app that we use, and that's to find out what keywords are actually converting. And so we'll use seller tools, seller.tools. Mm. And you know, you'll see all the keywords, and you might have, you know, something with, let's say, 5,000 search volume and another one that has 2,500 search volume and another keyword that has 600 search volume. The tool that seller.tools has will actually show you out of all this huge list of keywords that you're going after, what's actually selling. So it might be the one that's only doing 600 search volume per month, and you might be getting 50 orders. The one with 5,000 might be getting 20 orders. So putting time and effort into that keyword is much better than, you know, putting it into the larger keywords. So that's just, you know, one of those validation apps that we use to make sure that we're going after those right keywords.
Yep. So I actually don't use seller tools. I feel like I need to look into seller tools.
Oh, try it out. That's one of the little, like, not going to say nugget. It's one of the things that's just gold with that app. They did a really great job over there.
So they actually tell you what keywords convert. How yes. can they know exactly what keywords convert? I'd love to understand how they know that.
You got to talk to Troy and Brendan. I have no idea how they do it, but it actually works. Like with our rebate, when we're doing rebates or rebate management for clients, that's the tool that we use. So we go into Helium 10, pull out all the silos, go over to seller tools and find out what we should be targeting. Yeah, it's excellent. Really good.
It's you know, I don't do rebates. I do other things in PPC, but I feel like I need to go. As soon as we finish this podcast, I'm going to check out seller tools.
I'll get them on. We'll get them on the podcast tool. But you know, yeah, sure. Yeah, check it out. It's very good. Now, one of the things I tell everybody, especially if you're new, you're going to hear all these apps and all these tools that we all, you know, kind of use. But right now, find one app that you're happy with. So that could be Helium 10, it could be Amazon Scout, it could be Seller Tools, and you can get most of what we're talking about done with that one tool. No need to spend a ton of money on tools that kind of overlap, because none of them, for some reason, they just all don't do the same thing. One will give better alerts. Sentry, like I love SentryKit, for example. You know, they do a great job with alerts. But Helium 10 does it.
I love Quantify Ninja for notifications. Have you heard of Quantify Ninja?
Yes, yeah, Tomer told me about them.
I've been using Quantify Ninja for like 4 years, for like 3 years, I think. It's the best freaking tool ever. And it's no one knows about it because it's an Israeli software. Like it's not in Hebrew, it's in English, but it's by an Israeli developer. A lot of Israeli sellers use it. It's probably, I think, one of the best apps out there for notifications.
Yeah, that's Quantify Ninja. So anybody check that. Yeah. Quantify. All right, Kels.
Quantify.
There we go.
Kelsey, you're spot on. Like you're man.
Okay, so we had some questions come in about the repurposed content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, let's see. I have to go through all these. It was at the very top. I believe it was Usman. Okay, so Usman and Fatiha. They both ask them, how do you repurpose? What if customers don't buy? How do you validate the repurpose? And just to add on to that, if you targeted two audiences by repurposing, wouldn't that confuse the customers? Should we just aim at one and then spread out into different areas? So there's a lot to unpack there, but yeah.
Cool. So Norm, can I start?
Yes, absolutely. You're my guest.
Awesome. So for repurposing, let's understand. So first of all, when I do product research, I'm selling to a buyer avatar. I know who my buyer avatar is and I'm selling to them. Okay. Repurposing your product, if we all love Tim Jordan, let's use a Tim Jordan example, even though I've found this myself, but I know Tim Jordan does it too, is we know, for example, gardening seeds, right? So taking gardening seeds, but selling it as a party favor. Okay. That is repurposing a product. Taking hair ties, normal hair ties, putting them in a specific type of packaging and selling it as a party favor for little girls. That is repurposing a product. You're taking one product, but you're selling it to a different buyer avatar. You could be packaging it differently, but you're repurposing it for something else specifically. Okay? That is what I mean when I'm talking about repurposing a product. You're taking one product that is sold in a broad, like, to a broad customer, like buyer avatar, and you're focusing specifically on one type of buyer avatar, right? Does that make sense? Did I answer the question?
I think it makes sense.
And then how do you know if people are looking for it? Depends, you know, first of all, it depends on the product. You're not going to sell something there's no keywords for it, no one's looking for it, then, you know, you're not probably going to sell it, or you'll have to try it first, right, to see if it's... But you're taking a product that exists, so a clock, and taking that clock, if we have a clock that's, it's a broad clock, but making, instead of just a normal clock, selling a clock to seniors that reminds them what day it is. Okay? Like, you know what I mean?
That's
people
an idea.
People with Alzheimer's reminding them the date, the year, reminding them the year or whatever it is. Taking something broad and repurposing it to a specific buyer avatar. So taking one of my examples I use a lot is taking Dang it, what do you call it in English? Hold on, it'll come to me. Portable bidet, okay? Taking a portable bidet, gross product, get over it. Portable bidet, but selling it specifically as a peri bottle. So to women after they've given birth. So instead of just a normal portable bidet, you're repurposing it specifically to women who have just given birth, have stitches, whatever it may be. Gross, I know, but we're all adults here, I hope. Right? So taking a product from one place and repurposing it and focusing on a specific type of buyer avatar. That's perfect. My answer about I freaking love repurposing. I could speak about it all day.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same. And if it doesn't work, I think that was one of them. Doesn't work. You know, the old 80-20, you'll get some sales. Like Ben Cummings talks about this. He talked about it a lot in the earlier days, but, you know, just bunts. Be satisfied with a bunt. And like going back to the Mudders, I know that Mudders want this, but how do they find it if it's never been sold on Amazon? So I've got to get their attention to get it over to Amazon or over to my website. So that's the key, is just making sure that you're able, like if the keyword's there and people are looking for it, no problem. But if you've got to bring people's attention to it, then you've got to target them. So that might be on Facebook ads to get them to come over. So, yep.
The way that I do it, if I'm bringing, or if I'm coaching someone who's bringing in a product that does not exist on Amazon, I'm very hardcore PPC. So all I need is keywords to piggyback off. If I can find the keywords to piggyback off, then I'm fine, right? That makes sense for that specific product.
Okay.
So that's the way that, like you said, sometimes you'll bring out a product and it won't work. You and I, we first met when we were talking about our failed products, and I told you about one of my failed products. You know, we won't get into it because you'll probably not stop laughing again, but it's not every product is going to work, you know, and that's why you also trial. You don't just order 5,000 units. Well, I don't anyway, from day one. You trial things, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, move on.
That's it.
Yeah. Otherwise, you get into analysis paralysis, and all you're doing is looking all day instead of doing.
All right, so we have another question from Rad. How do you target a group, for example, outdoor campers?
So, well, it's not just outdoor campers. You got to niche it down. So, you know, there's millions of products you can sell to outdoor campers. So what are you selling specifically to outdoor campers? You need to start making your list of potential buyers or potential products. And if it's a potential product, then who are you selling that potential product to? So is it outdoor campers for people like outdoor? Wait, do they mean campers specifically? What's a camper specifically?
People who camp.
Oh, just like camping people, right? That's the buyer. Okay. So there's so many different products you can sell to campers, right? Like it could be anything. You just need to, for niching it down, it really depends. Is it to help them pack? Is it, you know, products to help people who are disabled when they're camping? Is it products to help mothers while they're with their kids on camping? Is it the actual camping gear? You gotta, that's the whole point of niching it down. That's the whole point of doing the product research. So your starting point is camping or outdoor or any camping related words. And then from there, you gotta niche it down to write yourself the different types of either products that campers need, and then you ask yourself, who can I sell this product to? So if we have, freaking hell, I don't camp. Give me a camping product.
Outdoor grill. How's that?
Okay. No, another thing. I can't think. I'm not good with grills. One more thing.
Okay. How about a fire pit? A portable fire pit.
A fire what?
A fire pit.
Portable fire pit. Okay. So what about if you're camping with your kids? I don't know if anyone cares about this. You have to go check your keywords. If you're camping with your kids and you want your kids, you know, not to go close to the portable fire kit thing, what about making selling a specific toy that is like a portable fire kit that you take with you so your kids can do it, right? Or what if we're looking at what kind of gear do they need for the portable fire kit, right? And I wish you wouldn't have said portable fire kit.
Oh, man.
About portable fire kits. But let's just say, you know what? Let's just say, like, even if it's a tent, okay? Or even if it's the gear for the tent. Or I don't know what the hell campers need. I'm not, like, a camping person. But I know, like, for example, packing, right? So packing for a camp or camping or things like that. What are the products that you need, right, as a camper? Know who your buyer avatar is. Go into Facebook groups of campers and look at what they need, or go to YouTube and watch what YouTubers pack when they or families that go camping. What are all the things that the YouTubers say that they need? There's usually a whole list in the description, you know, of products that they need for when they're doing their camping. And then start niching it down that way, right? The first thing I do when I find a potential product is I say, who can I sell this to? And then it goes like this: seniors, moms, dads, women, men, kids. Okay, solar lights. What the hell do you do with solar lights when you're camping?
All right, Rad, you're on the spot.
No, I'm just asking, like, what do you do with solar lights when you're
actually
camping?
I don't know. That would be really great. You know, because a lot of times you're just, if you're in the middle of the woods and you've got a candle or a lantern, solar lights actually would be a fantastic idea. Rad, there you go.
There you go, Rad, you found a product. Go and see if there's keywords for it.
That's actually a really great one for travel or for camping. And, you know, being in the backwoods of Canada.
I really don't camp, so I don't know. But when I don't know something, I just go learn about it. Portable fire guard for the kids, says Helen. See, so that's what I'm saying. You gotta, when someone says, how do I find products for outdoors or for camping? Go and learn what the products they need. I don't know anything about it, so I'd have to go learn about what are the potential buyers need? What are the products they need? Who can I sell that to? Because I like to niche it down to a specific type of buyer avatar. And then, you know, that's how you find your gaps in the market. I know I have an example in my head. I'm just not going to say it because it's actually something that someone I'm coaching is working on. But there's lots of little gaps.
Yeah. And one of the things that you might go, you might look at that portable fire pit with the guard around it, but then you might go down a different path because the guard might lead you to a different keyword or a different product. Now you're going down another rabbit hole. So it's really cool what you can do once you start thinking about it.
It's
camping games, activities. There we go. Yeah. Renee nailed it. Airbnb. There you go, Sharon. You can go shopping. You can go camping and just have to do it at an Airbnb instead. There you go.
Do you know how many products I've found that you can sell specifically to it, like as an Airbnb supply as well? Like for people who rent out their houses for Airbnb, they need all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
All sorts of like things that they need to change every single day, etc. There's Airbnb is also a great niche to look at. A camping garlic press. I'll go and bring out a camping garlic press tomorrow.
Yeah. Next thing you're gonna hear is a camping, what is it, spatula? Silicone spatula. That was the common one. All right, Kels, next question.
Okay, we are at 1 hour, just to let you know.
Sharon, what time do you have to go?
Oh, I'm good. I've got a coaching call only in an hour and a half, so I'll be here as long as you guys want me here.
All right. We had some questions about Etsy. So Jim was asking, how do you fulfill for Etsy and eBay via Amazon?
So this is what I was saying in the beginning, how I rely on Amazon multi-channel fulfillment. So either through Amazon multi-channel fulfillment, or you use a 3PL to fulfill for you, like Deliver, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Or ShipBob. And I don't know any others. I'm sure you do, Norm.
Yeah, no, like for me, if I was doing that, it would just be through a 3PL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just a reminder, if you are interested in the 30-minute consult, take two people to be entered. So it's only for people that have not had a consultation before. And for the chocolate, for a box of chocolate, I believe it's US only, correct?
Yes, it's only US. Yeah.
For sorry. Only US. So you need to do #beardguy. So those are the two things we're doing it today.
Okay.
another Etsy one. How do you get around the handmade requirement on Etsy? Is it a requirement?
I don't think it's a requirement anymore. You just need to be careful with Etsy. But I don't think that's it's a requirement anymore.
I think they got rid of that. Yeah.
I think they did get rid of that. I don't think it is a thing anymore.
Okay. From Gil, if you have a brand with one product, what should the strategy be for finding the next one?
Knowing who you're selling your product to and what other products they want.
Okay.
That's my answer. I'd love to hear what Norm's is.
Oh, I would just say, let's say if you've got soap, for example. Well, let's take the bath bomb. So you take the bath bombs and then you could go wide on it like you were talking about before. So now you've got these gifts. Then from the bath bombs, you could either go wider into the bath bombs, bigger or different ones, bath bombs with CBD, bath bombs with this, or bath bombs with that. Or you could get into other beauty products that you could either gift set around. So you might be putting a block of soap into it. You might be putting some liquid soap into it. I would be looking at, you know, especially with beauty, what you can combine as a gift set, because not only would you have this on Amazon, this is just, it's probably just too complicated, but I would look at probably having a couple products on Amazon that they're great on Amazon, but when they get the products, they have an insert that tells them to come on over to my website where they're available for gift sets or subscription-based products. So I just go wide on the product. You know, that's the easiest thing to do, especially like for something in beauty.
Let's also give a non-beauty answer because I also really heavily in beauty. So let's also say another way to expand on your brand is if it's not just to one specific buyer avatar. Okay, so if it's not just, so for example, one of my beauty brands, it's specifically for mature women. For women over the age of 50 specifically need my products, right? It's not for 20-year-olds. So I know who my buyer avatar is, and it's just so easy to sell products to them because I know what they need, right? But let's just say you sell in decor, okay? Let's say you sell, I don't know, a decor product, or how did you say it in Canada?
Decor.
Decor. Okay. Let's just say you sell a decor product. Let's just say you sell like a boho wall hanging thing or whatever. Then it's either you can look at the frequently bought with, you can look at your search term reports and see where you're getting sales for other keywords. There's many, many ways to expand your brand. And it really does depend, in my opinion, on your niche and where you're selling and what it is that you're selling. But that's also, frequently bought with, and we used to be able to use Yasiv. Didn't you love Yasiv, Norm?
Yasiv?
Yeah. Tell me, Noon, you must have not, YASIV, Yasiv.com. No. What? You didn't use Yasiv? Oh my God. It was like the best website in the world. It was like this spider web of products. You'd put in a product.
You're just saying spider web, by the way, and I've got this massive spider going across my floorboard right now.
Go kill it.
But okay, so this massive.
So Yasiv was a website. It was the best freaking website in the world. I made a YouTube video about it like a year ago when it was. Ages ago. It was more than a year ago. And then Amazon, and then they stopped working because Amazon took away the frequently bought with. What the way that they worked back in the day is you'd put in a product, and then it would take history of Amazon's frequently bought it with, and it would just show you the spider web of products to do with that product. It was best stuff. It was like the best website in the world. And then, Amazon, and then they stopped working. It doesn't work anymore. So sorry, you can't use that, but instead you can use frequently bought with as well. I think that for me, the way that I look at products expanding within my brand is because my brand building is so heavily around buyer avatar. That's the way that I do it. But if your product is not specifically just to one person, then I would look at either other variations of it that you can bring out, or like I said, frequently bought with, like you said, how you can make it a bundle, gift it with other things, etc. is a great way. Yeah.
Very good.
I told you I talk a lot. You gotta stop me.
Kelsey, tell Mom to come down and kill this big spider.
All right. Okay, from Manny. Hi, Sharon. But how do you get this feeling? What is a micro niche? What are signs that this micro niche is going to work outside, besides of keyword demand?
Oh, it really depends. The first thing for me is the keyword demand. And if I can find it being sold outside of Amazon, then it's great. And sometimes you just have to trial things, and sometimes it'll work and sometimes they won't, you know? It's, I'll give you an example. One of my things that I use as an example for the people in my product research course is I found, my starting point for finding a product was careers. I went into Google. I found the top 100 careers in America. One of them was nurses. And then I went and learned, I'm not a nurse. I don't know any nurses. And I had to go and learn everything there is to learn about nurses. Did you know, Norm, that nurses, do you have spiders in December? Henrietta asks. Did you know, Norm, that nurses have to buy their own gear for everything?
Oh.
All of their gear they have to buy themselves. Their scrubs, the hats that they wear, the badge, what do you call it? The badge reel. Their stethoscope, the stethoscope case, their clipboards, every single thing a nurse has, she has to buy herself. Did you know this?
I did not.
Neither did I. And I only know it because I was doing product research. So I got into a whole bunch of different Facebook groups for nurses. And I watched YouTube videos about students who are nurses, etc. And then I went on to Etsy and I found this product for nurses that doesn't exist on Amazon, but it sells really, really well on Etsy. I couldn't find the exact search term for the product on Amazon, meaning not necessarily are people buying it, right? No, searching for it, but there's very similar product not being sold targeted at nurses, meaning there's a broader product, okay? Let's just use an example. This is not the product, but let's just say it was a clipboard, okay? It's not the product, but let's just say it was a clipboard specifically for nurses, one that you could open up and put your phone in it or whatever it may be. And let's just say it wasn't sold on Amazon because no one had sold it on Amazon, but nurses need it. But it was selling really, really well on Etsy. That is enough for me to order a couple of hundred units and try it on Amazon, right? So the question was, how do we know that the niche is going to work? Sometimes you need to take a leap of faith. And sometimes Norm's busy killing the spider guys, so I'll just keep talking. Sometimes you need to take a leap of faith, and sometimes you can get it right. So it's that thing.
He'll be back. In a second.
Go, Norm, go to the spider.
I hate spiders.
Is it still walking around there?
No, my wife just came in and murdered it.
Killed it? Okay. How big was it?
At least.
Oh my God, that's huge.
No, it's probably no about that big.
I was in Australia once and there was a huntsman spider, which is like this big.
I'm oh. Not sure.
And in my dad's house, and it was terrible. So yeah, that was my answer to the question.
Okay. Kels. Let's take two more questions.
Okay. This is from Tony. Are you guys still requesting reviews on Amazon? I just discontinued in my follow-up email from Helium 10, and I'm seeing a difference in the lack of reviews. He also asks if you're still using Project X from Helium 10.
I use Quantify Ninja, which automatically clicks on the request for review button. That's what I do. And I don't know what he means by do you still use Project
X? What do you think of Project X, if you know?
You know, Tim Jordan's a friend of mine, and I love Tim Jordan. And I also love Helium 10, but I also speak my mind. I think that it's great on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't believe in the PPC side of it. So what they do is they use the bids, right? They try and see what the bids are for the product. I think they bring in like 10 units. They try and see what the bids are for the product. And then then they can get an idea of what the bids will be for that product. The problem I have with that is that developing a product can take between, let's say, 3 to 4 months. Agreed?
Yeah.
By the time you launch the product, who the hell says the bids are going to be the bids will be the same? By the time you launch the product properly with the most advanced, you know, the listings done correctly, you've got enough stock in, who says the bids are going to be the same? What the bids were 4 months ago does not mean it's what they're going to be in 4 months from now. Right? Agreed?
Yeah, for sure.
So on that side of things, I don't agree with it because that's the only thing I disagree with. Everything else, you know, it's nothing new to me. I've always been using Pinterest, et cetera, to do it. And I'm really against using, you know, softwares for a starting point. I don't use parameters. I use creativity and I use things that are outside the box. So I think that it's a great thing because they are using outside of Helium 10. But I also think that there are certain things that, you know, there is no 100%. And like I said, with bids, you can't get an idea of what the bid's going to be like in 6 months from now. You know, one of my products that I sell, which is an older product of mine, is a face sheet mask, like a face mask that's a face sheet mask, right? A moisturizing face. A year ago, the word face mask did not mean what it means today, right? So COVID also brought a whole bunch of new keywords into keywords that didn't exist or changed the meaning of a keyword, right? Yeah, no,
I just thought of something. Because you had these moisturizing masks, you might have been, or people who were selling those types of masks could have been targeted by the algorithm that said, oh, they used the word mask, now it's PPE. Did you ever see that?
I didn't get taken down. We did have to do a lot of changing, though. But we didn't get taken down. No, didn't. It's the Korean face sheet mask. We did have to do a lot of changes. But like for PPC wise, none of the PPC is the same as what it was because keywords are totally different for what they used to mean.
Right.
So that's it. That's my truth. I don't believe in using softwares as a starting point. I use softwares for keyword data and for other things. I don't use it as a starting point.
Very good. What was the first part of that question, Kels?
Reviews.
Yeah. Oh, reviews. Yeah.
Still requesting reviews.
Yeah, we're using Sellerize. So Sellerize I find is very good, but like requesting reviews, like or if you're asking for reviews, other than just requesting, pressing the button and requesting, we don't do anything other than that. And usually what we're finding, I don't know if your listing is good within the niche. I don't know, Sharon, 4 to 7% might be an average for reviews.
For us, I don't know what the percentage is, but we used to get around 1 every 100 sales, something like that. It has gone up a lot since the request for review.
Yeah.
It's interesting because reviews have gone up a lot and feedback, like seller feedback has gone down a lot. Have you found that? Or not really?
So. But what, like, over the year, I've noticed there's been I think what's happened is everybody's just been getting hit hard with every purchase that they bought on Amazon. So the feedback over the year has gone down.
Mm. You know,
but anyways, feedback and reviews, I think, have gone down a little bit. But if you've got a great product out there, we're looking at around 4-ish to 7-ish percent. If you got a really crappy product, you'll probably have a lot higher reviews, but they'll be negative.
We've gotten we have a lot more ratings than reviews now.
Yes.
So we have a lot more it's interesting that we have, because when you sell in beauty, reviews with images really matter, you know, before and afters and things like that. And that's actually gone down and there's a lot more ratings now than what we used to. Well, obviously you didn't have just ratings, but so that's something that we've also found as well. But I think it's for us, I think it's a bit higher than I think it's like more 7-ish percent plus, something like that.
Okay, so Kels, last question.
All right, last question. Let's see. Where'd it go? Okay, so this is, I guess, an opinion question. I have a folding lightweight pet door insert that is frameless on the bottom to make it easy for old dogs and really short dogs and cats. I'm thinking of selling it in the travel industry or veterans for pets that have had surgery or bad hips. Would this be a good repurpose?
I have to read that all over here. Hold on. I have a folding lightweight pet door insert that is frameless on the bottom to make it easy for old dogs. Did you understand the question, Norm?
I've seen the product.
Okay, then you can answer the question. I'm not getting it yet. I've still got to read it.
Okay, while Sharon's reading it, I think it would be a great product to repurpose for all sorts of different areas. So not only for Airbnb, for travel, something that's portable that you can take with you. That would be definitely something you could repurpose.
I still don't get what the product is. I have to understand it, but I think Norm.
Okay, so the product's really cool. So if you open up your door, you can slide this folding piece in between. And it's got a door where the dog can come in and out, or the whatever it is, cat, dog. So it's not something that's actually attached. You can bring it with you. So
it's genius. Very cool. You should definitely sell it towards Airbnb and travel.
Yeah, and get in. I know we're talking about repurpose, but this is perfect for companies like Chewy. They would eat that up.
Mm. Yep.
So hopefully that answered your question. I think we both think that, you can definitely repurpose it in different markets. But again, it's just knowing your audience.
And finding the right keywords.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a smart product. You just got to get it in front of the right people.
All right, Sharon. We're wrapping it up. Well, wow.
Thanks for having me.
Hour and 15 minutes. Okay. Now it comes down to the draw. Kelsey.
So just give me a second. I just got to share my screen.
The Wheel of Kelsey.
All right. So let's see. So this is for the consultation of Sharon.
All right.
So 3, 2, 1.
These are all non-winners.
Yes.
Okay.
So the winner is Laura.
All right. Congrats, Laura.
Woohoo.
So Kels, how do we get that information over to you?
So you can email me at k@lunchwithnorm.com.
Okay.
Or if you just want to Facebook message me too, that's always good. And for the chocolates, the second giveaway. And here we go. So I'll take this one out. I'm getting faster at this. Okay. For the chocolates, 3, 2, 1. Let's see who it is.
Victoria. All right.
Woohoo.
Perfect. All right, so Victoria, just get your information over to Kelsey and just email him at k@lunchwithnorm.com, and we'll get that gift off to you as well. And also, so the 30-minute consultation, that'll be great. All right, you're off the hook. Done.
Thanks, Tom. That was awesome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was a blast having you on the show. We'll have to have you on again.
I'm here whenever you want. I'll come on.
And next time I'll be able to think. I won't be full of Benadryl or whatever.
No problem. As you could tell, I'm good at talking, so I can continue talking.
You're awesome at talking.
No, I never shut up. It's part of my problem. It's a problem. I know.
Well, anyway. We will talk to you soon, Sharon. Thanks a lot for being on.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed it. We run these podcasts every Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at noon Eastern Central Time or Standard Time. There goes that Benadryl again. Kelsey, why don't you come on?
All right. So as you guys are all filtering out of here, make sure you go over to the Facebook group and get inside. We stream to the Facebook group, two Facebook pages, YouTube and LinkedIn. So the Facebook group is a great area to ask any of those questions that you may have been missed, or yes, smash the like button and hit the shares, ring the bell, subscribe to us on YouTube. But yeah, if we ever miss any questions, it's not because we don't like you. It's just we don't have time, and maybe we missed it. So if you ask it in the Facebook group, or just want an opinion and just want to get to know the other people here, I know a lot of people are actually like talking to each other now and making some friendships, which is always great to see. So it's Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and e-commerce collective, where you can find that. You have to answer 3 questions, super easy. We just want to know a little bit more about what you're doing on Amazon or eBay or Shopify.
Right.
And that's it. So, yeah.
We are having a Christmas at noon. So Lunch with Norm, we're doing it at noon Eastern Standard Time. And Shane Oglo is going to be on.
Yeah. So, yeah. Same time, Christmas Day, be here. And yeah, enjoy. And if we miss you, if you guys are doing having a Christmas day off of Lunch with Norm, well, we hope you're having a great time and you get to celebrate with your loved ones. And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, have a Merry Christmas, everybody. And that's it for today's show. So thanks a lot, everybody, for joining. And thanks a lot for being so engaged with the podcast as well as with the group. And just enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you later. Lunch with the lunch.